Continuing in Mitzvah Shin Sadi, hey, Mitzvah's Maisa Rishon, the mitzvah to give the first Maisa as opposed to the second Maisa, which is Maisa Sheni. So the first Maisa goes to the Levium. That means after you separate Truma Gidola, the first initial thing that you're supposed to take off of your produce, which is given to the Kohanim, then a tenth of what remains is supposed to be given to the Levium. Midini ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah as follows, Mashamar zichron l'vracha, Shamaiser hazeh asher la-Levium hu chulin gimurim, that this maiser that you give to the Levium has absolutely no holiness. It's simply a monetary obligation that one is required to give to the Levium, but there is no holiness to the produce as opposed to the truma, which not only must be given to the Kohanim as a monetary gift, but it may only be eaten if both it and the Kohen are tahor, and it can only be eaten by a Kohen or someone in the Kohen's household. So, so that's not the case by the Maiser, that both it does not only have to be a Levi, it could be a Yisrael who eats it, and the food could be Tamei, the people could be Tamei, everything could be Tamei. There is no holiness whatsoever to the food. If the Levi gets a bunch of grain as Maiser, and he wants to bake some bread, and then he wants to have his friend, the Yisrael, over for a Shabbos meal, that is totally fine, and he can serve the bread at the Shabbos meal. Shenemar v'nechshav lechem shumaschem, that this maaser should be considered. Kolmar maaser shumura mitvos ha'Yisrael doesn't mean truma per se in that pasuk, but rather truma in the non-technical sense of something that's separated from the produce. Shulachem kadogon min ha'goren v'chamliyam min ha'yakev. So this is just like of produce that's when it's finished its processing from the threshing floor or the winery. So it's just like regular produce, has no holiness whatsoever. But there's a caveat over here that it's not the whole meiser, as we're going to see in the next mitzvah, which is not, hopefully get there, maybe even today, is that once you give the Maiser to the Levium, they're not off scot-free. They don't just get to enjoy this whole thing, but the Levium have to give Maiser min ha-Maiser. That from their Maiser that they get, they have to give a tenth of that as well, which is interesting because in terms of the other Truma, the first Truma that everybody has to give from their produce, so there's no shir min ha-Torah, that you can give even a tiny bit of the produce is fulfills your obligation on a deraisa level. The Chachamim gave certain shirim for it, but there's no technical absolute halachic requirement, whereas for this truma, it has to be a tenth of the tenth. So if you give 90 bottles of wine, if you 90 bottles of wine to the Levi, so he has to give 9 bottles of wine to the Kohen. It has an exact measurement that you have to give one-tenth of your produce to the Levi, and of that, the produce has to give one-tenth. The Levi has to give one-tenth of the produce to a Kohen. So before, the Maiser Rishon has its Truma separated, the tenth of the tenth, then it also has the status of a Tevel. That means it has a produce that if you eat it, you're subject to Misa Bidei Shamayim, that you're death at the hands of heaven. That there is when you have a prohibition of Tevel, when you have produce from which the Trumas have not been separated, then you are subject to the prohibition of Misa, of the penalty of Misa Bidei Shamayim, and you eat this produce, again, assuming that it's Deraisa, then you would be subject to that prohibition. So again, so you cannot, nobody is allowed to eat the Maiser before the Trumas Maiser, the tenth of the tenth, has been separated. And but once that tenth of the tenth has been separated, so the rest of the Maiser lacks any type of holiness whatsoever. There's certain times in the Chumash where it talks about redeeming Maiser, so you can't redeem Maiser Rishon. That's to be given to the Levium. There's nothing to discuss. But Levi could, in theory, give it back to the Kohen, to the Yisrael. Say, sell it back. You say, hey, you know, you give the miser to the levy, and you, the levy says, you know, I'm not really interested in all these figs, so maybe you'll give me money instead, and I'll sell it back to you. So that would be fine. But you have to. That's not a pedia exactly. That's not a redemption of the miser, but rather it's like an extra monetary transaction after the miser was already given. But the only time when miser can be directly redeemed is miser sheni, the second miser, which is not given to the levim, but rather get taken by the owners and eaten in Yerushalayim. So if you can't, you schlep all this stuff to Yerushalayim, so you redeem it on money, and then you use the money to purchase food in Yerushalayim and eat it with the sanctity of Maaser Sheni. Amar b'Sifri, the Lachik Medrash on Sefer Sefer Ben Midbar says... again, at least in some versions, it doesn't necessarily appear in the version that we have in front of us, but here's the way the Sefer Chinuch is quoting it. Shekolshu ochel adam v'nishmar v'gidulo min ha'aretz chaye v'maiser u'betruma. That's something that is human food and is protected and grows from the ground. So that is something that is subject to the requirement of tithe. So as opposed to what? So if it's not grown, if there's a certain plant that's not grown as human food at all, it's only grown for animal feed. What's that? Can you think of an example of such a thing?
Corn, soy.
No, that's human food. Isn't hay a byproduct of...
Hay is grass.
Yeah.
It's sort of like wheat stalks also. But
yeah. So okay, fine. Hey, good. So hay is not subject. Assuming a person wants to eat some hay, you don't have to separate trumas from maaseres.
Somebody who's crazy went out and ate hay or something.
But that's to be something that's normally human food.
It's not normal human food. But my point was, it's not normal human food.
Then nishmar, it has to be protected, meaning that you grow it in a controlled environment. If it's something that's just growing wild and nobody's watching over it, it's exempt from the tithes. The gidula min haaretz, meaning there has to be...
It's on your property.
What?
It's growing wild... And you're not tending it, but it's on your property. Well,
mushrooms or something like that.
Yeah. Correct.
But you might actually use them. I mean, you're not tending them, but you see them.
Yeah, but it's not. But there's no.
That's still. And there's no. It has to be nishmar.
But they're not. Okay.
It has to be guarded. You have to, you know, put. Yeah. Put scarecrows to make sure people don't take it. If it's just lying for anybody to take, and you're not actively involved in guarding it, then it's exempt. And gidula min haaretz, meaning to exempt to something like mushrooms and truffles. So mushrooms and truffles halachically are not considered to be grown from the ground because they, they derive sustenance from the ground, but they don't have the same structures as the regular plants. I mean, they're fungi; they're not really plants. But halachically speaking, they're not considered to be. Gidula min haaretz, and therefore they do not need to be tithed. So you can go buy mushrooms from any store in Eretz Yisrael, and you don't have to worry about the separation of trumas and maaseres.
And the bracha shakol for them, right?
And the bracha on truffles and mushrooms is a shahakol. It's not bari pri adama, but nevertheless, if you made the bracha bari pri adama, you'd be yotzei b'diavad. That is not really the correct bracha, but you wouldn't have to repeat the bracha. If you made the bracha of a bori pri adama,
and for truffles, you also make shechianim, right?
parentheses, chocolate with a bracha of ha'etz.
Hmm?
What? When you have a
chocolate bar?
What do you mean?
Somebody just presented the idea that you could argue theoretically that a chocolate bar is clearly chocolate which grows on a tree.
It's a little bit of a different thing that
I know it is, but I was curious. I mean, is that even a serious position?
Yeah, it is a serious position for certain types of chocolates. It depends exactly on how they're made, but you have this idea that the question is, why is the bracha on wine and olive oil, at least theoretically, although it's hard to put in practice, why is the bracha on wine bari pri hagafen, and why is the bracha on olive oil bari pri ha'etz? Why isn't it chakol? It should be, it's a juice. Mm-hmm. So the answer is that in halacha, there are two reasons. So one is that the grapes and olives are the only fruits where the juice of them, or the squeezed product of them, is more important than the fruit itself. Mm-hmm. So the halacha considers, again, we have this many times, that, for example, there's a prohibition on Shabbos that you're not allowed to squeeze fruit. So the only fruit that you're not allowed to squeeze on a d'oraisa level is grapes and olives, because that's considered to be the only fruit that's really squeezable. Halachically. Again, you can physically squeeze other fruit, but halachically squeezable is grapes and olives. So that's one reason that's to do just with the halacha. Then there's another reason, which is that when people plant grapes and olives, their main focus is on the wine and the oil, and not so much on the fruit itself, although they might eat a little bit of the fruit as well. So if you go with a second reason, if you feel like that's the main reason, so then we have a big question about the orange groves nowadays, that with a lot of orange groves that are grown, the oranges are squeezed. So classically in halacha, that would be a shakal, because that's just considered, it's not considered a really a squeezable fruit, that the squeezed product is called Zeya Ba'alma. It's just like the fruit gave a sweat or something, and that wouldn't be really the fruit. So it would be shakal. But the question is, nowadays that everybody drinks orange juice, tons and tons of orange juice, and the main reason you plant half the oranges in the world are because of orange juice. So some people argue that the contemporary orange juice should be Borei Pri Haetz. You'll be able to see Borei Pri Haetz, but the Evid anyway. Because
nobody eats cacao beans from where the chocolate is made from, right?
That's exactly right.
People eat if you just have plain grapes, like in a fruit bowl, and you have some grapes.
That's Haetz, for sure.
It is Haetz.
Yeah.
Not a Geffen?
No, because that's the special bracha. Yeah. But so the same thing might apply to chocolate. So since cacao beans, they do sell cacao nibs that people eat plain cacao beans now. Yeah. It's a popular health food somewhat nowadays. So he's asking about chocolate. But the question is, the chocolate, the trees, the cacao is used to make chocolate. So that's the ultimate expression of this fruit is chocolate. Mm-hmm. So therefore, a similar idea to the orange juice. So some people say that the bracha on chocolate is Haetz. There is some question because I was reading actually a discussion of this. I forget exactly what he said, but he said the way they make some high-end chocolates is that that they pulverize different parts of the cacao plant separately, then it's completely un-cacao-ified, then they mix it back together, so that would for sure be shahakol. Anyway, obviously the common practice is to make a shakal. You could argue on maybe coffee also. The same thing. Maybe you should make haetz on drinking coffee. The same as far as the normal practice and all these things is that you only make a special bracha on the product of grapes and olives, but not on other fruits, even if that's the main tachlis of the fruit. But anyway, so the mushrooms are dem lechatchila shakol, but they're exempt from the requirement of tithes. So the pasuk says explicitly that the beginnings of the grain and wine and the oil. So it says, the Sifri says, all these things are the human food and grow from the ground, and they have owners there, or they're guarded. Because as the gan cha, your grain. So this approach holds that everything essentially is liable for the trumas umaisris, or is obligated on a deraisa level. All these foods are chayiv. Ava hayirakos, so even everybody agrees that vegetables are not chayiv in trumas umaisris on a deraisa level. That the obligation on vegetables is only derabanan. All the grain of your seed. The yerek eno nikra tvua. Yerek is not grain. So wait a minute. So all the other stuff is also not grain.
How do we define
yerek? It also could be. Why? What's a shaila? Well, what would you have a doubt about whether it's considered to be a yarek?
Because botanically, some of them are good fruit.
Yeah, but it doesn't go by botany. It goes by, I mean, the general definition is that if it's not one of these species of grain, and the true and the classical definition of a tree in halacha, a fruit tree, is that the trees last from year to year, as opposed to having to be replanted every year. So tomatoes.
Like so that's the definition.
Right. So tomatoes. I mean, a blueberry is for sure a tree, but the
tomatoes are not. You know,
tomatoes are not. Even though botanically, yes, everybody know people are say, haha, you think tomato is a vegetable? Tomato is really a fruit. So it depends on how you look at it, because botanically, yes, but in terms of culinarily, that the way people use it, it's a vegetable and not a fruit. And in terms of halacha, a tomato is certainly...
And bananas, too, of course.
Yeah, banana. That's a famous case where bananas grow on a tall tree-like thing, but it disappears every year. So that's... It is also somewhat of a shaila that there might be shittas that that's called eitz, but we normally assume that that's called hadama. And again, but if you made eitz on a banana, so you'd be yotzi b'dieved. And the same thing as papaya. So papaya, everybody thinks is a fruit, but according, it has the same idea that the triangle, that the it doesn't look very tree-like and it doesn't last for very long. So therefore, what?
Is that the thing that grows on the trunk of the tree or something like that? You know,
yeah, I think it's something like that. Papaya, I have to get look on Wikipedia and get a picture of the papaya tree. But Lamaisa, the papaya tree is a big shaila, because if a papaya is a fruit and not a vegetable, then a papaya is orla almost by definition, because it only grows during the first couple of years of the tree's life. And yeah, so either papaya is a hadama, it's considered a halachically vegetable, or it's not kosher. So take your pick.
Because it's orla.
Because
it's orla.
Always orla.
It's like, I think it's a tree, it grows...
Off the stem or the trunk
yeah,
of the
I think
tree.
It grows directly off the trunk of the tree, and the tree doesn't last very long, maybe more than a year. Okay, well, together
it's not like an apple tree. No.
So that's the shaila. So if it's a vegetable halachically, if it's a bari pri hadama, then it's kosher. But if you bari pri ha'eitz, then it's not kosher, because the tree only lasts for...
What do you mean it's not kosher?
Because it's orla. Because you're not allowed to eat the fruit from the first couple 3 years of the tree's life. So if it's a tree and it only lasts for a year or two, then it's by definition. Yeah, so we assume it's adama. That's the psak is adama. Although certain hechsherim won't give a hechsher to papaya that grows in Eretz Yisrael, because the laws of orla are more stringent in Eretz Yisrael than in Chutz Laaretz. Even though in Chutz Laaretz it's sort of like vaday orla, because it's for sure, but since there's at least a doubt as to whether there's an orla applicable at all, so maybe you apply this idea of safek orla b'chutz laaretz is mutter. But okay, so the normally accepted psak is that papaya is certainly a hadama, and it's not a problem of orla. This shaila was actually raised, even more importantly, by eggplant. Uh-huh. Eggplant also grows on a very short type of plant and doesn't last for very long. This was already in the times of the Beis Yosef. The shaila was raised regarding eggplant. So, according to some shittas, eggplant is not kosher because it's ha'eitz, and it doesn't grow past the first couple of years.
Eggplants aren't perennials, or you know they.
It's not in the north.
Let's look. We'll look online for the details of the thing. But there was a discussion as to whether eggplants were in fact kosher. But it says.
So, maybe it's in the south.
But there, even the super when it comes to eggplant is such an entrenched part of Israeli cuisine. Mm-hmm. Even the super duper hecherim will not hesitate to give hechsher to eggplant that's grown in Eretz Yisrael, because the very strong tradition is it already says that in the times of the Beis Yosef, the Arizal and the Beis Yosef themselves used to eat eggplant. So I have a very strong tradition from that time. So therefore, we assume that that eggplant is kosher. Of course, it has to be kosher. How could you have your shawarma without your fried eggplant in the shawarma? Okay. Fine. So vegetables are only chayav midrabanan. We did bring out the Gemara she'anu samchim ba yoser nire shigam b'chol aperos chutz midagan tirushvitzar en chiv amaitzar ba en elami midrabanan. However, this is what it seems from the Sifri. But in terms of the way it seems from the Talmud Bavli, there are many passages that seem to indicate that all produce besides grain, wine, grape juice, whatever, and olive oil, is putter is exempt from trumas u maestras, so even fruits would be only derabanan. So that's the majority opinion amongst the Rishonim. That's the case. So what it says in the that about other things regarding besides vegetables is not even a, the Sifri doesn't even mean it perhaps as a, as an explicit biblical prohibition. So you have a discussion in Maseches Bava Metzia about a fig tree that is standing outside a courtyard and its branches extend into a courtyard, then you have when the figs ripen, so they'll already be inside a private area. Inside the courtyard, we'll be to discuss a little bit later regarding the idea of that things might not be chayav in Trumas Maisers till they come into your house or into your courtyard. So here, if as soon as the fig ripens, it's in your courtyard, so maybe it's chayav right away. So regarding that discussion, it seems that there's only an issue that they're talking about that's derabanan. Omnam haRambam zal kosav hefech mizeh Moshe Matzah b'Sivri. And in fact, the Rambam paskins that fruit is subject to the requirement of trumas u'maisris on a deraisa level. But again, that's not the majority opinion of the Rishonim. That the only things that are deraisa are dogon tirosh v'itz, are grain, wine, and olive oil. You're not allowed to separate tithes from one year's produce to another year's produce. You have to take each group separately and separate the tithes from within that year's produce. And not by one species to another. That you can't, if you have 50... bushels of apples and 50 bushels of pears, that you can't say, well, that amounts to 100, so I'm going to take 10 bushels of apples and I'm going to exempt the 100 bushels of apples and pears. You can't do that. It has to be within each species separately. Below minachiyuv, there's a discussion, lots of discussions in halacha, what's considered the same species. You know, is green pepper and orange pepper the same species? It's a bit of a shiloh with these things. So you have also potentially that maybe you already separated the tithes from one batch of produce, and then you have a new batch of produce, and the new batch of produce is unbelievably good quality. Unbelievable. And the one that you already separated the tithes from is maybe is not as high quality. Again, you're not supposed to give really bad stuff, but maybe you don't want to separate from the super duper high quality stuff. So you want to say, hey, well, I already separated the tithes over there, but you know what? I have 90 bushels of this new produce that's unbelievable quality. And then, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take 10 bushels of the old stuff that was already meistered. I'm going to put it together with the 90 bushels of the new stuff. And then I'm going to say, okay, so this 10 bushels of the old stuff should be the meister for the whole batch. So you're not allowed to do that. If it hadn't been meistered yet, then yeah, you could do that. But if it's something's already been meistered, it no longer has a shame tevel. It's no longer unmeistered produce, so you can't use it as the meiser of a different batch of produce. Aval me'asrin shelo min hamukaf. Oh, so he says that if you did it, the meiser is ineffective. But you can take meiser if the produce is not all together. There's a rule by truma that all the produce is supposed to be all together in one room when you separate the truma. But there's no such rule by meiser. For example, let's say you have 50 bushels of apples at your farm in upstate New York, and then you have 50 bushels of apples. Okay, that's wrong places. Okay, New York, not the separation was fine, so it's fine. But you have 50 bushels of apples in your farm in the Galilee, and you have another 50 bushels of apples in your farm in the in Eilat area. So you are allowed to say, if assuming they all haven't been meistered. Okay, that's a bad example also because Eilat might not be part of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, but you get my point. There are two different Beit Shemesh. One is in the Galilee, one's Beit Shemesh. Fine. So you could separate. You could say you could take 10 of the bushels of produce that's in Beit Shemesh, and you say these 10 should apply to all the rest of the 50 here, as well as the 50 in my other farm in the Galil. They don't have to be in the same place, which is not the case by Truma. That L'chatchila, at least, they're all supposed to be in the same place. The chol she'e anu orim b'truma ain tormin v'imtorm shemasu truma kach b'maiser mifrish maisros b'maisros. And the same thing happens. I'm sorry. Mikol makom b'shar dvarim shavin and truma b'maisros. That for the rest of the rules, so truma and maiser are the same. That if you shouldn't do something lechatchila, you shouldn't do lechatchila by maiser also. And if you shouldn't do, but if you did it b'di'evit, it works by truma. So b'di'evit, it works by maiser also. V'chol shu patur min ha-truma, patur min ha-maiser. Anything that's exempt from truma is exempt from maiser. V'seder shoftim ha-sevav, narich v'dvarim b'gzeres ha-shem v'tirenu misham. We talked about the mitzvah of truma, so we're going to explain more over there when we get to Parshas. What is it, shoftim or something? Okay. V'chein, yeah.
Just another footnote here. Claiming that the Rambam, he says that when you're separating truma, you shouldn't use an exact measure, but sort of have to estimate how much of it. Why on earth would that be?
Because the Torah doesn't give an exact measurement. It says ratios.
But you decide, okay, I want to give, say, 1%, you know, and so, you know you have 100 bushels, and so you take a bushel and you fill it up, why can't you do that? That seems like my,
No, there are approximate measurements that you're supposed to use. So it says that if you're very generous with Truma, you should give 1/40. If you're less generous, 1/50.
And
if you're less,
1/40, don't measure.
You're supposed to estimate. You're not supposed to measure it.
Estimate, okay.
You're supposed to estimate this amount, but you're not supposed to measure it. But by Meiser,
you're not supposed to measure it.
That's the rule, because it's supposed to, the nature of the Truma Gedola is supposed to be approximate. It's the nature. So then the...
You get snuck it too. You shouldn't, write the check out exactly. I don't know. That's what some of my brothers and said, people don't work this way,
Oh, but the right, so you can give a tiny one grain and it works.
Yeah. All right.
So here you have an exact measurement. So here you have to, you must give a tenth of your produce to the Levi, and the Levi must give a tenth of that exactly to the Kohen, and that's an exact measurement. The chein meinyan ha-mitzvah, ma-shonam zichron al-racha, she'in adam chayiv lafrish meiser min ha-torah el ha-gomer peirosav lo'ochlan la'atzmo, that the only time your chayiv and shumas u-maiseres b'daraisa is when you finish the processing of your produce to eat yourself. Ha-gomer le'mochron b'shuk pater min ha-torah, that if you were using it to sell, then you're exempt on a deraisa level. Shenemar aser taser ve'ochal ta, and you shall eat. V'chein alokeach achar shenigmar melachta, and if you purchase it after it was already fully processed, kilomar shenimrechu biyad mocher, that everything was nice and smoothed out, everything was totally prepared to that required no more melacha. Pater min haTorah v'chayim midivrem. That's on a deraisa level. That's exempt. So it has to be tvuas zarecha, your produce. That has to be that the final stage of the processing has to be in the domain of the person who wants to eat it. So if you have a farmer and he's planning to sell all his produce, then if he finishes the processing on his farm, then the produce will be forever exempt from the tithes. It's only if you're growing it and you want to eat yourself, or if you purchase it before the malacha is done, before the it's finished processing, and then you finish processing it in your domain, then it'll be chayav on a deraisa level.
So it's basically exempt produce that's for sale?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nowadays, most produce is for sale. How much?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah, deraisa, Rabbanon, it's still obligated, but on a deraisa level, it would be exempt. Yes. Yeah, so yeah, most of the produce in
there's no sales tax for if it's wholesale. Yeah.
Most of the produce.
Your final consumption. Yeah.
You're right. Most of the produce in Israel nowadays is only obligated to be Rabbanon. The whole thing is like Rabbanon.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good point. Okay. That's how it is. That's why the Chachamim instituted. Otherwise, there'd be too much lack of tithes. Levim wouldn't have what to eat if you left everything on an exact deraisa level. V'ein chiyuv meiser chal beperos ad shiyagio leonas meiser. So before the produce even gets to a level of a certain level of development, there's no requirement for Ma'isar at all, even the Rabbanan. Shemar Mizera Ha'aretz Mipri Ha'etz. That it says from the seed of the land, from the fruit of the tree. And that's machta, okay. But Shkolomar Adje Yose Pri. That has to be fruitified. The same thing, that grain has to be granified. What does that mean? That before it gets to the point where it could be planted and grow, and what exactly, how exactly that connects to the next words, I'm not 100% sure, but until it gets to a certain stage of development, you're allowed to eat as much as you want without tithing. Yeah.
You said that the farmer, let's say, sells wholesale to the store owner. Okay.
Yeah.
And he has to, but Durbanan, he has to take out a tithe, maser.
Someone has to.
Oh, someone. Okay. It only has to be done once. It's done though. Then at that point, it's already that you don't have to take it out again. So how does the seems to me if it's not done each stage, like a value added tax or something, right?
No, not each stage for sure. That's not necessary.
Right. Okay. Okay. So what else? So in other words, So Drabunan, the farmer's obligated to go ahead and take it out before he. But then the store owner, the store owner has to keep track of what already has been,
Correct. Exactly right. Really, it should be done at the first stage.
Yeah.
That part of this process called accepting to become a nem on al hamaisris. That part of is the institution of demai, where you always have to maiser something where you're not sure of its provenance and you're not 100% sure you could trust the person who purveyed it to you, but you're not supposed to sell anything without without having maaser. You're supposed to take responsibility. Yeah.
So if the guy at the first stage of the thing, sells it to the storekeeper without tithing it,
yeah,
and then the storekeeper doesn't tithe it, then he sells
it to
you.
The purchaser has to tithe it.
So you the consumer are stuck with only getting 9 things for $10 worth of stuff.
Yeah, but there has to be transparency. No, if he didn't set the tithe, you have to know. That could affect the price, yeah.
So, there's something fishy going on.
No, you're right. It has to be, obviously, it's worth less if the back of it hasn't been tithed yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, so
exactly.
That has to be factored in. You have to keep track. The store owner has to tell you whether it's been tithed or not.
So then if he's going to charge you less for it, then he's taking the loss, not the first guy. The second guy's taking the loss, the storekeeper.
No, at each stage. So if you're planning to sell it retail, I don't know if you're allowed to do this, Rila Chatkila, but if you're planning to sell it retail untithed, so then you...
Sale on untithed produce.
Mm-hmm. Then you have to... Yeah, so the farmer is going to charge less than the store owner is going to charge less. Exactly right. But if the farmer already tithes it, then everything is done already. They can charge more.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
It's like, how do you keep track of the kosher chicken? So sometimes you kosher chicken, not anymore, most people, but sometimes you kosher the meat at home, and sometimes it's kosher for you at the butcher. So if it's kosher already in the butcher, they charge more than if you do it at home.
I have a collection of kosher chickens years ago.
Everybody should know how to do it. No, it's a lost art. Everybody once in their lives should have the experience.
Thing from my great aunt.
Yeah, everyone once in their lives should have the experience of kashering meat. If you haven't done it yet, so find someone who's willing to sell you unkashered meat and do it yourself. If you look hard enough, you'll find someone who's willing to sell it to you.
I don't know. Where else would I go?
If you look hard, you can find.
No, there used to be other guys around. There used to be people.
Yeah, years ago, you could find. I remember even when I was a little kid, I remember seeing at stores. I remember seeing even when I was a kid in the 90s, not in the 70s, way back in the ancient times of the 90s.
Yeah.
I remember seeing on some packages of meat at the store, not most of them, but I remember seeing not soaked and salted on some.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I remember that. On the west side in the ancient days, right?
Yeah, I think I did.
Well, usually it was the butchers who were not that reliable, in fact, in the old days. There used to be, wouldn't soak and salt because, after all, it also means that they can keep more of the property. Weighs more. They're telling you the blood, too,
Oh.
Yeah, so you have to make sure you buy from a reliable butcher.
You also have to pay more, and you also have to do the work.
Yeah.
Cute.
Yep. Okay. So, fine. Where were we? Potter mitzvah v'chayim mitzvah mishnah. Ve'in chiyum ma'isa chal v'peres. Oh, we did it. Smiach v'olmash. Ketzad. So what is the stage at which the produce is liable for chumas v'maisras? Hateinim mishayyeasu rakin shevruyin lechol. Figs, when they get soft enough to eat. Certain point, figs, you sometimes buy figs in the store. Assuming figs are kosher, so then you could buy figs in the store, and you could, sometimes they're hard. So if they're too hard, so they're inedible, so then you don't have to tie them, even if you would like to snack on some figs.
Once they ripen, do you have to...
What?
Once they ripen, if you... You buy them...
No, unripe. I'm saying if they're really unripe, to the extent that they're normally would be considered inedible because they're too hard, then you don't have to miser them at all. You could eat as much as you want without misering.
Once they become ripe, is what you said.
Oh, yeah, once they become ripe, yeah, then you have to miser them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Hatapuchin v'asrogim mishi yisaglu. So apples and citrons, when they become roundish, as opposed to, I guess, like a little bud pre-fruit type of structure. But when they become nice and round and fruit-like, so then you have to tie them. But before that, you don't have to tie them. V'chein l'chol pri kavu anosu l'maiser. So then you have different fruits that Chazal gave different times. They have to miser them. Kolomar shekodem zman zeh kavu lehem ochlim em kol atzarech lefi she'enam b'toras miser klal. That before this time, you can eat as much as you want with no restrictions and no requirement of tithing. Aval achar zman zeh ein ochlim behen el arai ad sheyikbu lehem gornon lemiser. So even after this time, it's still not totally required in Trumas u'Maisras. That even after they reach the point of onas hamaisris, you're still allowed to eat them on a temporary basis, a non-fixed basis. What does it mean? You're not allowed to sit down, you know, with take a nice plump fig and take a plate and take a knife and fork, if you eat figs with a knife and fork, you know, and sit down and enjoy. But let's say you're in the field and you're going amongst your trees, and you just, hey, that fig looks really juicy, and then you want to eat your fig, then that would be allowed. Ve'achar shegornan kavua lemaiser, asur lechol me'an afilu achila sarai. And after the processing is completed, that you've gathered them, you know, in the official bushels, and, you know, they're all ready, basically, and processed, then that would, then you would not be even allowed, you would not even be allowed to eat them on a temporary basis, if they have reached the stage of maturity of the fruit that would obligate them in Maestris. And interesting, something he doesn't mention here is the concept of Shabbos. That on Shabbos, there's no such thing as Achilas Arai. That when it reached the Onas HaMaestris, when it reached the stage of maturity, then you're not allowed to eat it on Shabbos unless it's been Maestred, or you Maestred it in a way that you're allowed on Shabbos.
There's
no such thing as Achilas Arai on Shabbos. Every eating on Shabbos is considered by definition, because it has halachic significance, it's considered to be Achilas Keva.
Does that mean that Shabbos and Sukkos, you have to eat everything in Sukkah? You can't have such things as Achilas Arai?
Cute, but I wouldn't say that. No cigar, I would say. But... something I think Reb Chaim had a big chiddush. Reb Chaim Brisker said that you're not allowed to eat mizonos on Shabbos. Why? I mean, you're allowed, but why? There's no such thing as making the bracha mizonos on Shabbos, because we know that if you're koveya suda on cake, so you sit down and you have your whole spread at your table, you have some tuna fish and some cream cheese, and you're serving drinks, and you have salad, and you have vegetables, and you don't have any bread on the table, but you have a cake, and the cake is the main grain product of the meal. Then you have to make hamotzi on the cake, because that's considered kviya suda. Because basically, the lumdus is that cake, fundamentally in halacha, is considered bread. Mm-hmm. It's just you have a heter not to wash and bench on it, because it's not a real meal type of bread, but rather it's a type of bread that people eat as a snack as opposed to a meal. So therefore, if you make a meal out of it, so now it's regular bread. So says Reb Chaim, on Shabbos, because you learn from this, that Shabbos, all eating is an official meal. So if you have a cake or a cookie on Shabbos, it means that it's not a snack like bread. Now it's a meal bread on Shabbos. So. Therefore,
you hold from Mizonos rules then, right?
Oh, Mizonos rules, nobody holds. Not nobody, but...
oxymoron.
Mizonos rolls is not the Psak Lamaisa. This is not the Psak Lamaisa. Lamaisa, this is not the...
So you had a cookie, then you're snacking between meals, you had a black and white.
I think it's based on a Rishon or something.
At 4 o'clock.
So according to the Shtickel of Reb Chaim, I don't even know if he held this Lamaisa or he just suggested it. I really don't know. It's based on I think, or some Rishon, I don't remember exactly. But according to this idea, so yeah, if you want to have one black and white cookie and a snack on Shabbos afternoon, you would have to wash and bench. And then use two cookies, because then it's a meal.
How many cookies?
You can also say, though, that that's not really appropriate for Shabbos. You're supposed to have three meals, and you're not really munching all between
them. What? No, you either have a... So there's an idea that you're supposed to snack on Shabbos because of the Mea Brachas. Because it's hard to get the requisite 100 brachas on Shabbos, so you're supposed to have extra snacks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Okay.
So...
Yeah,
so it's interesting.
One cookie and one grape and one...
Shabbos has a magic when it comes to Trumos and Maisers. We were talking last time about Demai, that when you buy something for someone who's not Neman al HaMaisers, an official person who's considered to be reliable regarding the Afreshes Trumos and Maisers, so you have to Maiser because of the requirement of Demai, not a Deraisa requirement, but a Derachumra Derabanan. So the rule
is...
Okay. The rule is that on Shabbos you're allowed to believe in Amoretz, whether he separated Trumos and Maisers, because of Emas Shabbos. Now on Shabbos everyone is more religious, and there's no way he would lie to you about separating Trumos and Maisers. So it's interesting, because then that only applies to eat it on Shabbos, but after Shabbos you have to Maiser it. It's interesting. So you are allowed to go to someone's house on Shabbos who's not Neman al HaMaisers for a Shabbos meal, as long as they state orally explicitly that they personally separated Trumos and Maisers. So most people don't do that. Wouldn't apply to Shabbos meals to most people in Eretz Yisrael nowadays. Most people rely on the Hechsher for separating Trumos and Maisers. So yeah, if you got the Mashgiach from the Hechsher to tell you that he separated Trumos and Maisers, you could believe him.
So wait, how do you do it on Shabbos? There is some way you can do it, right?
There is a way by stating in advance that you're planning to do it, is one way.
Oh, but if you didn't state it in advance, you're stuck.
No, you're pretty stuck. I mean, like the Chazon Ish had this interesting kula that you're allowed to miser something that has a good hechsher on Shabbos. Because there it's not really a tikkun, because it's hard to say that you're really not allowed to eat it, make your adin. But since lemaisa we require you, because of this chumra, the Chazon Ish would require you anyway, to separate the trumas and misers, so he would say that you're allowed to miser it on Shabbos. It's interesting. It's a little bit of a chiddush. Ve'ez hu garnan lemaiser, what is considered to be the granary for Meiser. What does that mean? Hatvua misha yimrach. What does that mean? When you gather the produce in piles and you take like a tool and you smooth them over to make really nice piles, that is considered to be the gemar melacha, and it is now absolutely required to have a Meiser separated, and you would not be allowed to eat it at all before doing so. Fine, that's the way people do it. If you're not planning on smoothing the pile, so once you make a set pile and to store it in that manner, then that's chayev. So the pasuk says, what does it say? Goren. Where does it use the word goren? Migornecha, mitaspecha, migornecha. Yeah. So it says that you take it from your granary. So then the real point is the granary is just that if there's another stage of processing after the granary, that meaning the smoothing, then it goes by the smoothing. Vafilo also imena goren besoch beso. You make granary piles within your house. Gam sham osa goren kviyos lemaiser. It doesn't matter where it is. It could be in your house as well. It doesn't have to be in the granary. V'had amar Reb Hoshaya marim adam al tvasu machnisa b'motz shela kedei lefotra mimaiser. V'yalach ha'psuka kedei b'maseches brachos. So Reb Hoshaya says that there's a way that you could get out of performing trumas lemaisers, which is that you bring the grain in with the chaff. So it hasn't had the gemar melacha yet. You didn't make the grain into nice piles. So you bring that into your house, and then when you want to eat a little bit of grain, so you just take the grain and you eat it. So that would then there's no point at which it would be required to have Trumas and Maisers, because there would be no gemar melacha and no achilas keva. That only applies if you didn't form a pile out of this produce. You didn't smooth it. That you separate the chaff little by little. And you put it in your storehouses bit by bit. And you didn't make an official pile out of it. This is what seems to be clear in this subject. Brios v'tovos. And in this thing, so there'll be no contradictions between different places in the Gemara, where sometimes it talks about how you could get out of it, sometimes it talks about meiruach, sometimes it talks about gemar malacha, making piles, and everything is going to be all nice and together, and I think we'll continue next week.